Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and thanks for tuning in to Inside Scoop Live. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and joining me today is author Sandy Nathan. Sandy Nathan knows the world she describes in her writing. She draws on personal studies in meditation, spirituality, and mysticism, as well as her experiences in the Silicon Valley corporate culture. She breathes life into her characters and gives them depth and dimension. Her first book, Stepping Off the Edge, Learning and Living Spiritual Practice, was a Benjamin Franklin Award finalist and winner of 5 other national awards. Her second book, Noumenon, won the prestigious 2009 Silver Nautilus Award. The Nautilus Award recognizes distinguished books that promote conscious living, and previous winners include the Dalai Lama and Barbara Kingsolver. Sandy Nathan's books have won 8 additional awards, including 2 IPPY awards. The mother of 3 grown children, she and her husband live on their California horse ranch. And you can find out much more about Sandy and her books at sandynathan.com. So welcome to the program, Sandy.
Oh, welcome. I'm glad to be here, Juanita. It's delightful.
Wonderful. You know, you have such an interesting life story, and I'd love for you to share a little bit about your previous life up until 1995, which from what I understand really was a pivotal time, and that's when you really embarked on your writing career.
Yes, that's when I became able to finish books as well as start.
Oh.
Yeah, well, I was born in San Francisco, and I was raised on the San Francisco Peninsula, right in the heart of what became Silicon Valley. So when I read or when I write about the richest man in the world, who's my character in Noumenon, and all this high life of Silicon Valley, you know, I knew some of it. My dad was the president of a major corporation, and so I peaked at that life. I had a lot to do with that. But he was killed when I was 18, and that changed my life completely. You know, the golden glamour was gone, and I had to get myself going and earn my own living and learn a lot.
At a young age, 18, wow.
Yeah, that was a hard time.
I bet.
A hard time. But I got, you know, I got over it. I got 2 master's degrees, 1 in economics and 1 in counseling, and I worked at the graduate school. I worked as a doctoral student at the Graduate School of Business at Stanford, and, you know, had a career as an economist and negotiation coach. I've done a lot of things.
And you were really in the business world.
Yes, yeah, I was. I mean, I was raised in that. I mean, as far as my dad was concerned, there was only one career, and that was business. Oh, yes. And I started out as a business major, you know, and ended up with an economics major. And I have a master's in economics, as I said, and went right up to the business school before I realized that I really couldn't do the math. So I wasn't a natural. You know, there are people that I've met that naturally think in terms of differential equations, and I wasn't one of them.
So, you weren't there. And yeah. It's interesting, the subtitle of your new book, Noumenon, is A Tale of Mysticism and Money. So you're really bringing that around in this book.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. You know, I lived in some of Silicon Valley's fancier suburbs, and I got to see the life. I got to see the good aspects of it, and I got to see the bad aspects of it, too, which are pretty horrific. So, yeah, my book really is lived through and heartfelt.
And so in 1995, you had a spiritual experience, and I don't know if you really want to share what that experience was, but I'd really like for you to just give us an idea of how that actually prompted you to really get into writing professionally.
Sure, yeah. Well, actually, the experience that I had started in 1993, and I found out something then, and it just shattered my life. It just changed my whole worldview. It was not a good thing. And so from 1993 to 1995, I did a lot of meditating. I did a lot of personal growth activities. I did a lot of healing. So in 1995, I went to a meditation retreat, and when I left, I was just like all new. I mean, it was just fabulous. The retreat worked wonderfully. But I didn't realize that that wasn't even the beginning. And when I got home, I had an experience that I can recall as vividly as if it was happening. I had an experience where it was like a bolt of lightning entered my right temple and went through my head.
Really?
And exploded inside of me, and it was like a Hollywood special effects thing, you know, with lights and swirling, swirling colors, and mostly blue and silver, but really amazing. And when it was gone, I had a book in my head.
Wow.
And I didn't even know what it was. It was just there was this idea there. And I went downstairs and I typed it out, and I had about 7 pages. And I showed it to my husband and I said, you know, what is this? What do you think of this? And he says, well, it's really good, but it's too short. Why don't you flesh it out? You know, so I sat down and I started writing. 275 pages later, I had what was one of the first drafts of Numenon.
Oh, is that right? I was thinking it was maybe your first book, Stepping Off the Edge.
No, no. Stepping Off the Edge came in completely in the same kind of a way with a huge spiritual experience.
Mm-hmm.
No, well, actually, Numenon, it's the story of the richest man in the world meeting this great Native American shaman.
Mm-hmm.
And they go to a retreat that's in the middle of the desert of New Mexico. So that's the basic setting of Numenon. But so here there's this retreat. Well, years after I had been working on Numenon, I heard about a retreat, a Native American retreat in Tennessee, featuring my favorite entertainer, who is a fellow named Bill Miller, who is Mohican, a Native American entertainer.
Yes.
And so I went to the retreat, and I was just knocked over. I had absolutely no intention of writing Stepping Off the Edge. But it started with the gathering retreat that he leads every September. Actually, he just led it. And that's what, you know, it was a powerful experience there, and it led me to write Stepping Off the Edge.
And that was more of a personal growth book, nonfiction.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's sort of a how-to book. It's the way I do how-to, which is with a lot of stories. And it's one in memoir. It's one in self-help. It's one in spirituality, New Age. So, and it's just a lot of stories about how to handle challenges in life, like eBay addiction, for one.
eBay addiction?
I'm a certified eBay addict.
Are you?
Yes, yeah, I got on eBay, actually to buy looking at one of Bill Miller's paintings that was on eBay.
Oh!
I got on it, and it was like, it's all over. You can read all about it, Stepping Off the Edge. It was really bad, and I discovered online addiction. And at that time, people were just beginning to talk about it, so I give you a real eyeful, and I give you what I did to get out of it.
Oh, that's fantastic. That I'm sure is very needed right now with how much time we spend on the computer.
Yeah, yeah. I'm real wary of doing a lot of online stuff because I know, you know, from my eBay experience.
Well, all the social networking now that basically you're almost required to be doing that to be really, you know, a part of society.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. I don't do as much of it as I should.
Mm.
So, you know, I'm probably not as well known as I should be because I'm not out there plugging away. But it's because of what happened to me with the eBay. So all I can say is read Stepping Off the Edge, those chapters. Oh, it also has to do with infatuation with rock stars and with handling evil. If you have evil in your life, you have to deal with it like that.
So. Well, so there's a common thread with the whole idea of evil, then, that is in Stepping Off the Edge and Numenon.
Yes, yes, yeah. Yeah, and Numenon, definitely our hero is this kind of unsavory fellow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's the richest man in the world, you know, and he didn't get that way by being a nice guy. And so he's going with his executives in this caravan of very fancy motorhomes, RVs, to the retreat site in New Mexico. And you get to know him pretty well. He's pretty ruthless. And so he's sort of a person, well, he's not sort of. He's actually at a point in his life where he could be taken by evil or he could be taken by good. And that's what a lot of the story is about, too, is, you know, is the shaman going to win, you know, or is this stalker, this unnamed thing that's been stalking him all of his life, is it going to win?
Did you base your lead character, his name is Will Duane, on anyone in real life?
No.
Okay.
No. I don't really know that a major executive could be as dysfunctional as
okay. Hopefully
I mean,
not,
maybe
right?
They are, but, you know, Will's got some real problems. So I don't really know that, you know, a real executive would be like him. Maybe so, but he's not based on anybody. His energy, the kind of energy that he's got, the drive that he's got, I do base on people that I've known, like particularly my dad. My dad was one of these people that sort of skated along on the edge of a razor, you know, I mean, going as fast as he could go and as effective as he could be all the time.
What drives that kind of a personality?
Oh, well, you find out in the sequel.
Okay.
When Will finally gets diagnosed. It's pathology. You know, I mean, there's certain types of mental illnesses that run in society, and you know, we all have some form of them. So Will, you know, definitely has his own. But you find out more in the sequel to Numenon. What makes Will tick?
So you are really saying quite a bit about real life in general, in the business world. And so there are some real personal statements you're making with Numenon.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I love one of the reviewers' comments that this is a book that is kind of Bill Gates meets Don Juan.
I love that.
Isn't that great?
Somebody came up with that, and I, you know, I would not have thought of it, because I think personally that Bill Gates is a really nice guy.
Yeah, right.
And what he's doing with his charitable work is just fabulous. But that's sort of what it is, you know. It's like, here's Mr. Silicon Valley, and in my fiction, Will Duane is the person who began the computer industry. He was in a, you know, like from the 50s. So I tinker with history a little bit and have it starting a little bit earlier than it does, but with him. So here's this very powerful, very intelligent man who's ruthless meeting the shaman. So it's not, you know, the real Bill Gates, I don't think, is quite like that.
But. No. And this book really is considered visionary fiction, which is kind of, it's a genre that is really, really growing. What do you feel about the label?
Well, it definitely is visionary fiction. You know, it's really funny, there's a lot of mysticism in it from Will's side and also from Grandfather's side and from his people and the things that happen. But a lot of them were just my write-ups of stuff that's happened to me in meditation, you know, because I've had meditation experiences that were that wild. I mean, I've just told you about a couple of them. So, yeah, it's visionary fiction. A lot of visionary fiction puts out there it's like it sort of closes and gives you the sense that this is really going to happen, you know. And I guess I'm a little more ambivalent than that, you know. It's like I feel like we could have this ideal future. We could have Grandfather's vision he describes early on as the world where love is king, which I love. That's probably my favorite part of the book. He describes a vision that he's had when he was a young apprentice shaman with his teacher. And he sees a world where people cooperate and where they love each other and where race doesn't matter and wealth doesn't matter. And, you know, so he sees this world where love is king. And I think we could get that world or we could get something else. You know, it just depends on what we do and how we act. So I'm not...
not prophecy. It's not prophecy.
It's not prophecy. It's a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So how involved are you in Native American culture and the Native American mysticism of the Southwest?
Not really a lot, actually. You know, my friends are back in Tennessee, and they're Cherokee mostly. I mean, a lot of different from different nations, but mostly Cherokee, Navajo, you know, that. So I've gone back to the gathering several times, you know, after the first time. And the director of the gathering is a really good friend of mine. So that's kind of my my hookup with Native American culture. We spend more time in New Mexico now, so I'm hoping to get more involved with Natives, you know, there. But I'm not at this point. I do pass everything by her. Like I gave her my drafts. And I gave her my author's note. I gave her everything, you know, to make sure that I wouldn't have inadvertently said something that was offensive. Mm-hmm. And so she said, you know, everything passed muster, so I'm happy.
That's great. You know, the Cherokee, I mean, there's such rich history with the Cherokee, and they did move around a lot, but there's just something so unique to New Mexico and the First Nations people of the Southwest. Really yeah. beautiful culture.
Yeah.
And that
yeah.
part of the Mogollon Bowl, I think that's how you pronounce it. I've been in that area. I mean, that is just, there's some fascinating things going on in that area. So interesting that you picked that for your setting.
Yeah, it's actually, I changed it around a lot. Like I made the Mogollon Bowl or Mogollon Bowl. There's different ways of pronouncing it. But anyway, I made that flat. I made it more like it's in Arizona's Painted Desert than it is in the actual Mogollon territory, the mountains of New Mexico. So I didn't want to step on any feet or toes, and I didn't want to, to talk about sacred sites. So the Mogollon Bowl or Mogollon Bowl is fictional, totally.
Gotcha.
Including the map in the front of the book.
Yeah.
It's all
That's
fictional.
Great.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Are you looking for new ways to promote your book? Why not consider being interviewed live? With the huge impact internet radio as well as podcasting is making in our society, your voice can now be heard worldwide. Let Juanita at Inside Scoop Live create the necessary steps for you. You will not only receive a web page of your own, but your interview will be available for MP3 download and RSS feed. As well, your interview will be posted on venues such as iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, Podcast Alley, and the Inside Scoop Live blog. Go to InsideScoopLive.com today for more information. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. I'm talking today with Sandy Nathan, author of Numenon, and you can find out more about Sandy through her website, sandynathan.com. So what was your conscious intent for the takeaway message for this book?
It can be a pretty dark book. These
uh-huh.
folks from the corporate world are in these RVs or going across the thing. All of them start getting into the head tripping, you know. It's like it's part of going to a retreat. I've done probably 60 retreats. I love retreats. And I know every time I sign up for one, immediately everything that bothers me comes up. It's just a mess. And so these guys, and I know that what's going on with them is absolutely what would happen. But so even though it gets very dark and Will is fighting demons literally, that I want them to take away the fact that life is rough and you can win, you know, mm-hmm. because we have grandfather throughout the whole thing. He's just as steady as a rock. He never wavers on his principles, and he just emits light. You know, he's just a creature that is good, and he's done all of his work on himself, and he just exists to help others. And it's, you know, every single word about him says that. He has his own struggles with, like, the internet, for one thing. but, you know, just who he is good. So I want people to know that you can go through all of your struggles and still touch that shining core and bring that forth and live from that.
That's beautiful. And so there is a sequel coming out. Will it have a whole completely different message, or is it a continuation?
No, it's pretty much the continuation of this. I sat down in 1995. I sat down and I wrote for 9 years. So there's not only just this sequel, there's a whole bunch of them behind that.
You've got a whole series here and several yeah. other projects, from what I understand.
Yeah. So the sequel is what happens at the bowl when they actually get there. And what it is pretty much everything happens.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And then the other things I've got going, I'm really... Spiritual experiences really are what run my writing. And last year, it was like a year ago, January, my brother had died a few months before that, and I was still grieving from him. And so I found myself in a dream, and in the dream I dreamt about this gorgeous golden ethereal creature, sort of like grandfather. I mean, she was totally good, and all she wished was good for everyone. And I found her sort of like settle on me as I was sleeping, and I woke up, I was in her state. It was like I was in her skin.
Oh, wow.
And it was just an amazing experience. I loved it. And then this whole book came to me in the next few days. And so that's a sci-fi. And so right now we're looking at what, you know, what avenue to take to have it published. So,
where do you think this inspiration is coming from in these spiritual experiences that you're having? I mean, that's very profound.
Well, you know, I've always been a person who has religious experiences or spiritual experiences. I mean, from the time I was a little kid, and sort of like everything I've done has just made them more intense. You know, we have horses now, and I had a horse when I was like 13. I got my own horse. I used to go out in the hills and reach these unitive experiences where I could feel like I was one with the redwoods and one with the forest around me and the horse. And it was just, you know, I've always had experiences like that. So the writing is just kind of an extension of them.
Mm-hmm.
You have to apply the seat-to-chair principle.
Mm-hmm.
When you sit there and you write, you actually do the writing. But, you know, the inspiration, I don't know, seems to come by itself.
And so do you ever have a problem actually getting down to the writing process?
Oh, yeah.
Do you? I mean, there's always 101 things to do, right?
Yeah. I'm having the most terrible time with Mogollon. The sequel to Numenon, you know, it's been written for a really long time, but it's really long. It's probably going to be like 800 to 1,000 pages. You know, publishers just don't like that these days.
Yeah, right.
Unless you're really famous. So I'm figuring out how can I make this 800-page really interesting book, 150 or like 300 pages at most. It's really hard. So I've been struggling with that.
So what do you think is the hardest thing about writing?
Pretty much everything.
Really?
Yeah, it really is. You know, like I had these big experiences that gave me ideas for books, but, you know, the 5 or 10 or 20 or 40 years before them were really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was me struggling with an issue, me struggling with something, my brother's death, you know, all of this really hard stuff. And then it's like my soul or my psyche just kind of kicks out, you know, an idea kicks out a plot. But it seems effortless when it happens, but it's not, you know. And then you do have to spend the time. I mean, they don't write themselves, so you have to spend the time at the computer writing away, rewriting, working with the editor, you know. I mean,
it can get grueling.
It's grueling. It's very grueling.
And especially,
and it's a head trip, too, because you know, you're by yourself. You don't have a lot of people going, oh, this is great, this isn't great. So the feedback and the interaction is not there a lot.
Well, how do you deal with that isolation? Because I think that's a factor for a lot of writers.
Yeah, well, what I've found lately is I just really have to quit, you know. And just, again, it's a matter of paying attention inside of myself and just going, look, okay, when the time is right, some of that thing inside of you that runs things is going to kick in and tell you what to do, you know. So just stop eating yourself up now trying to rewrite this thing or trying to do this or trying to do that. And just, you know, trust the process, as they say, and trust that the right thing will come for me. So, and the other thing is, too, really I'm learning now as I really make sure that I have enough social outlets. You know, go out with people, talk to people, go out to dinner, play, all of that, you know, not just entirely writing.
And I imagine if you start getting really frustrated with the process or you're just sitting and nothing's flowing, then it's time to step away from the computer.
Yes, and do something else. Unfortunately, there's always lots to do.
Yeah.
There's always lots and lots to do.
Of course there is. And you know, it's interesting because I did read somewhere that you also said that you feel that writing, especially if you're going to be writing as a career or profession, that you almost have to have a spiritual mandate to be a writer.
Yes,
because it takes that much dedication.
Yeah. You know, somebody said something about writing a spiritual book just to, you know, kick out a fast profit. And I went, what? You know,
they don't know what they're talking about.
There's no such thing as a fast profit, you know, it's not that easy to succeed. So I think that you do need to have something inside of you that just won't quit. You know, it may withdraw from the game for a while. It may change the way you do things, may change your direction. But it doesn't quit.
And so advice from you for writers that are embarking on that first book, what are some of your thoughts?
Well, I would say, I tried to write a lot of books before I had that big experience in 95. I wanted to write a bio of my dad, and I tried writing other things, and I just could not do them. And I would say to wait until you do have the experience. It's like getting a green light from your soul, or almost like getting a green light from God. That, yes, I can start now. And then you'll have the power behind you to finish the thing, to work through the thing, to do all the edits, to do all the rewriting. But make sure that you get the go-ahead, that something says do it.
Great, great advice. Now, you are also very creative. I understand that you paint, you draw, you've delved into sculpture. How important to you is that type of artistic expression, aside from writing, to who you are, to your life experience, and to your writing projects?
Well, it's funny. I illustrated Stepping Off the Edge. So there's drawings inside, and those are my drawings.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't drawn for years. And I just was sitting around one evening watching TV and started drawing one of our horses. And so that came up. I don't usually draw a really lot or do other kinds of things, not to say I won't in the future. Mostly what I concentrate on now is writing. But I think as important as that is physical. Like I go to the gym and I walk.
Mm-hmm.
And those things I think are really important to writers.
Keep the energy moving.
Keeps the energy moving and just gets you out of your head. Your body. So, yeah.
So I would love for you to talk a little bit about your awards and how you're feeling being such a multi-award winning author. I mean, 10 national awards. That's incredible, Sandy, for two books.
For two books. I was absolutely shocked, Juanita.
And two, from what I
had no idea. I worked very hard on Stepping Off the Edge, and it's really beautifully produced. I had great people working as a book consultant, mm-hmm. and I had great people working on the production of the book. And we entered the thing, and it won 6 awards. I was so shocked, had no idea. But I did work a great deal on it, so. I kind of settled down from that shock and realized maybe I'd done some work and maybe that's why I got it. And then Numenon, the same thing. It's just, it's won 4 so far, I think. It's up for another one. I haven't heard the results yet. But, I was just, blown away. I was so tickled. It won the 2009 Silver Nautilus Award, which is an award to pick out or to reward distinguished books that have social consciousness or they're green or, try and lead us to a better world. And so that one I was, really
mm-hmm.
blown away to win.
Yeah.
The Dalai Lama is one of the people who's won it, who's one of my favorite people in the universe.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I just feel really moved and kind of awed and astonished, but very happy.
Well, you've certainly put out 2 very, very impressive books. I mean, you mentioned the production. They look good. They really, they look like a very professional piece of work, a piece of literature. And I know that this is really important for you. And this, I've also heard you talk about this in advice to other authors, that you got to put out a really professional looking product.
Oh, without a doubt. I also judge one of the contests. I can't say which one because it's proprietary information.
Mm.
But if you're thinking of entering a book contest, you ought to realize what you're up against. And so I thought I was being nuts, with the way I produced my books, which was just really a lot of work, of meticulousness. But then when you see the other books that your book is going to be against,
mm-hmm.
It's just you really, really, really need to be as, discriminating and as tough on your production values as you possibly can. And that goes through everything. That goes through the proofing and the editing and the writing and all of that.
Cover design, everything.
Yeah, everything, the whole thing.
And it's sometimes hard for writers who just love to write to really get into that mode.
Yeah, I think so. There all my different careers kicked in, you know, because I used to be an economist, and there is nothing, if economists are not compulsive, they are nothing. You know, they're just, these are a whole bunch of real born nitpickers, I might want to say. So that really engaged in this.
Was there any struggles for you in the publicity side of things?
I think that the publicity and the sales part of it are the hardest part, without a doubt. So that continues to be an area where I'm working. I think you have to work, because there's what I just was. Somebody replied to sent a note into my blog today asking for help in marketing, and I told her, look, there's like 170,000 to 190,000 books published every year.
At least, yeah.
And you have to realize that, you know, making your stand out is going to be a job. So I think that's the hardest job. Yeah. But it's sort of like writing. It's all hard, you know.
But it's worth it. And clearly you have so many projects on the way that it's not detracting you.
No. What I really like to do is I really like the writing, and I like that burst, you know, of the silver sparkles in my head and the golden angel and and all of that stuff. That's really nice, but it's all part of the same thing.
Now, your website is sandynathan.com, and you have quite a bit of information up there about your books, but also your workshops as well. Did you want to mention your workshops and that side of what you do?
Well, right now I don't have any scheduled. You know, I'm working on developing those. I'm trying to figure out exactly what form those might take. I could do like a self-help workshop. I could do something based on stepping off the edge, you know, or I could do something for writers. So I'm just still developing that.
Developing it. Well, fantastic. You have a lot on your plate.
Yes, it feels good.
Yeah. Well, it's been great talking with you, Sandy. You really have had such a rich life experience, and your books are taking off like it's just unbelievable. So you're onto something, and I'm so glad that you had a chance to talk with us today. It's been a wonderful conversation.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
You bet. Did you have any last thoughts you wanted to share with your audience?
Last thoughts? Well, I would say look inside yourself. That's where the answers are. Then create them outside. That's pretty much what Grandfather's vision of the world where love is king was about, was creating that inner world outside in the larger world. So that I'd like to leave.
That's beautiful, Sandy. Thank you so much. You take care.
Okay, same to you.
All right. Okay, listeners, that's been Sandy Nathan. Her new book, Numenon, is available. It's on shelves now. Purchases can be made through Amazon as well as online and your local booksellers. Also, Stepping Off the Edge, her first book, is available. And all of that, more information, Sandy's future projects, her workshops, all of that can be found at sandynathan.com. So I hope you have enjoyed our interview today. I want to thank you for tuning in again to Inside Scoop Live. I'm Juanita Watson, and until next time.